wonderful hour it was.
Very cool.
Thanks so much. And, Peter, have a wonderful week. Well, no, you'll be back tomorrow night. You don't get Fridays off. You don't live in Australia.
I don't get a kangaroo or a house in Australia. I just am so overlooked.
You don't even have a kookaburra chirping outside your window.
I don't, but I have Fred ringing the doorbell from the satellite.
Yeah, invisible Fred. Scary. John, you're around the corner. It's Billy Shear's music night, right?
Yep, and I kind of, with your vibe, a little extra music tonight, I think, and, you know, just some stuff. So, but, yeah, Steve Winwood tonight, which should be cool.
Mm. Okie dokie.
We'll see you on the other side.
All right. Later, guys.
Hugs, John. Bye, kids.
And in the meantime, here's the late, great Lowell George reminding you to...
This is a top to you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see, the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11, 11,
and most
11,
of the
and
amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes, you know, be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up, all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show, right here on the Horn. It's Foxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Foxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-443-2366, or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453. Yeah. Your host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
Hey, everybody, welcome aboard. Foxed Up here for a Thursday night or Friday morning or Friday afternoon, all depending on where it is on this beautiful blue marble that you reside, such that it is. Boy, I flipped that around. Anyway, it's coming up on my weekend. And being Thursday, you know that it means it's Billy Shear's music night. And we got a good one tonight. Steve Winwood. And I just actually was, you know, haven't had a look around, just, you know, go find the wiki. He was 15 when he got into the Spencer Davis Group. Wow. Didn't realize he was that young when he started. But, you know, bands like Traffic, Blind Faith, solo stuff. You know, one of those artists, some of it genius. I think some of it questionable. I like it better when he's playing guitar than when he's playing keyboards, personally. And then we got some other stuff, some other music, and just some other stuff. So, without further ado, Billy Shears Music. Don't forget, Night Sounds, Saturdays, 9 to midnight, here on the Head On Radio Network. So, here's Mr. Billy Shears with Steve Winwood. Roll it, Bob.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Steve Winwood. At age 15, he was the British white boy whose voice sounded like a grown-up Ray Charles. Looking to play more adventurous music, in 1967, he joined with Jim Capaldi, Dave Mason, and Chris Wood to form the band that created exactly that, Traffic. After that, he formed the band Blind Faith. Then came his hit solo albums. Now, Steve Winwood has a brand new CD titled 9 Lives. And during this series, we'll take a listen to some of those songs. And we'll also hear Steve Winwood's comments.
Well, 9 Lives is quite simply my 9th album, and there's 9 songs. So it's no more complicated than that. I felt that on about time we hit on something that fascinated me, and I've tried to continue along that same lines. I mean, the people that are playing on the album, on the majority of the tracks, are the people that I go out and play live with. Hi, this is Steve Winwood. Welcome to a behind-the-scenes look at my new album, 9 Lives.
But not down heavy on a weary brow. Light shining in the pouring rain. Could see somehow cold comfort in the broken tree. But I won't let it bring me to my knees. I'm not flying. I'm not drowning now. Keep driving, don't matter if the highway's lost. Keep running, never turn your head.
From Steve Winwood's new album, 9 Lives, that was the opening track, I'm Not Drowning. This is the only song on the entire album that he plays all the instruments. He was asked if he toyed with adding other instruments.
I did, but I felt that it had something which, whether or not I was having an attack of demoitis, I don't know, which is a dreadful disease that musicians get.
Oh, horrible.
And whether it was born out of an attack of that, I don't know. But I grew to love it as it was in its rough, naked form.
Steve Winwood is a musical thrill seeker. He delights in throwing together styles of music that haven't ever been combined before.
The melting pot idea has been something I've been trying to do for years and years, I suppose, going right back to early Traffic days when we literally did set out to combine world music, rock, jazz,
folk and different kinds of ethnic music, classical music, to create something that we felt belonged exclusively to us as Traffic. And of course, since the demise of Traffic, I've tried to pick up that legacy and to carry it on, because either you can be a traditionalist, which I have a lot of respect for people who play and sing traditional music of any kind of persuasion, but it's something that I've chosen not to do. I've chosen to actually try and combine various, some people may say, slightly mismatched forms of music. In one way, the more mismatched it is, the more intent I am in trying to make it work.
Special sauce blending Brazilian rhythms, British rock and roll, and the blues. The chef is Steve Winwood, and he serves it up on Nine Lives.
I'm now, as you know, working with Eric Clapton, and of course, for him, blues is very much the rock upon which he's built his whole musical palette. And perhaps I may have hopped around on a few different rocks, I don't know. Blues at one point, and then early Traffic days we used to try and embody different kinds of music, and then of course after having worked with Tito Puente and Arturo Sandoval, I had a big interest in elements of Latin music, and then from working with Jose, Brazilian music.
Steve and Eric played three amazing shows at the end of February at New York's Madison Square Garden. Eric Clapton remembers it was quite different the last time he played Madison Square Garden with Steve Winwood.
There was a great deal of restraint which had to be employed, because we were treading on one another's toes. And I was so in awe of Steve and respectful about his space. And this made me kind of rein in a lot more than I'd ever done before. And I felt myself that I was constricted. And of course, because we were blown up and hyped up so much, that was very uncomfortable too. And everyone was very paranoid. Very nervous, and we did Madison Square Garden, we did the biggest gigs. It was heavy, heavy going, and we were just terrified all the time. And of course, on the bill, there was Delaney and Bonnie, and in contrast, they were having the best time in the world. There was no pressure on them. They went on and played their set, and a fantastic time. We went on shaking and white, had a dreadful time, and I just yearned for the that happy-go-luckiness that they had. So I started hanging around with them, and I immediately clicked with Delaney and members of his band too, and they took to me, I took to them, and next thing I knew they were where I wanted to be.
Keep the sweet
Dirty City, Steve Winwood and Eric Clapton reunited in the studio after 39 years. Join us next week for part two of Nine Lives with Steve Winwood. This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Nice one, Billy. Very nice. And I do like when Steve Winwood's doing guitar-based better than keyboard-based. If that makes sense to anyone. No, it sounds good. Great player, no doubt about it. Kick-ass player. Even before Bob went all DJ at the end of his show, I was thinking about playing some more music, so we're going to do that. And it's funny because I had a Truckers song in mind as well, but different than Bob played because I just got the new album, and I haven't quite gotten through it. It's rather long, which is cool. But this is just a great, fun, groovy rock and roll song with a lyric that is just, I don't know, it's in a very kind of snarky way, speaks volumes of the time, and it's just fantastic. First time I heard this, I was just like, beautiful piece of writing, beautiful piece of writing, and just a great song. So this is off of, what is this, Brightener Than, what the hell's the name of the album again? Bob says I've gone all dirty. Anyway, Brighter Than Creation's Dark. And so anyway, this is just a great fun song. So Self-Destructive Zones, roll it, Bob.
Tries to save an amplifier, and it's like the dragon side of the story.
That is just rock and roll poetry. That is just absolute rock and roll poetry. And speaking of poetry, there was quite a reaction to the Saul Williams thing yesterday, so I figured I should give another example of that and maybe sell Saul Williams and company another $5 download. Because you can't classify this Niggy Tardust record. And, you know, I'm looking through trying to pick a track, and you know, it's really hard. Because there's no one single track that says this is what it's about. Because you can't say it with a one-track example. But I just think this is an interesting track. Great loopage work. Really poetic lyric. Saul Williams off of The Inevitable Rise and Liberation of Niggy Tardust, Raised to be Lowered. Roll it, Bob.
Manifest your dreams before you manifest your fears. To navigate beyond the treachery of self-despair. To find the balance between all your sins and all you see. To find the patience and the strength it takes to let it be. To stand amongst the crowd and have the strength to hold your own. To throw away the pain and pain and simply be the poem. To rise above hatred, to love your seeming contradiction. To seldom take a side and learn to compromise addiction. To bring about the change within that we can live without. To shift and rearrange our deals and learn to deal with doubt. To voice the victory and unerase our self-defeat. To learn the value of your fuck the words that's why the feet. To leave the comfort zones of all you know the all you feel. To step beyond the void and realize the unknown the thrill. To reimagine every obstacle and sense of made. Upholding time and learn to let
to be lowered.
Sorry, I'm not laughing at the music. Oh, it's like I have a gift of being able to conjure. We got David on the line. David from Maine, how are you, mate? Welcome aboard.
You believe in magic now. Oh, man. I usually limit myself to, like, one call on this show. But,
right.
I mean, one call a week. And so, yeah, to me, what's not to say about Saul Williams? One of the most well-read, gifted guys. You know, to show people, because that is lyrics, but this is something entirely else. And if I can read it to you, I'll try to take out the repetitive parts, but I think a lot of people will get something out of it.
Yeah, go for it.
All right. Whereas breakbeats have been the missing link, connecting the diaspora community to its drum-woven past, whereas the quantized drum has allowed the whirling mathematicians to calculate the ever-changing distance between rock and stardom, whereas the velocity of the spinning vinyl cross-faded, spun backwards, and re-released at the same given time of recorded history yet at a different moment in time's continuum has allowed history to catch up with the present, we do hereby declare reality unkempt by the changing standards of dialogue, statements such as keep it real, especially when punctuating or anticipating modes of ultra-violence inflicted psychologically or physically, or depicting an unchanging rule of events will henceforth be seen as retroactive and not representative of the individual determined is. Furthermore, as determined by the collective consciousness of this state of being and the lessened distance between thought patterns and their secular manifestations, the role of men as listening receptacles is to be increased by a number no less than 70% of the current enlisted as vocal aggressors. Mother effers better realize now is the time to self-actualize. We have found evidence that hip-hop standard 85 RPM when increased by a number as least half the rate of its standard or decreased at three-fourths of its speed may be a determining factor in heightening consciousness. Studies show that when a given norm is changed in the face of the unchanging, the remaining contradictions will parallel the truth. Equate rhyme with reason, sun with season. Our cyclical relationship to phenomenon has encouraged scholars to erase the center of periods, thus symbolizing the nonlinear character of cause and effect. Reject mediocrity. Your current frequencies of understanding outweigh that which has been given for you to understand. The current standard is the equivalent of an adolescent restricted to the diet of an infant. The rapidly changing body would acquire dysfunctional and deformative symptoms and could not properly mature of a diet of applesauce and crushed pears. Light years are interchangeable with years of living in darkness. The role of darkness is not to be seen or equated with ignorance, but with the unknown and the mysteries of the unseen. We claim the present as the present, as the hereafter. We are unraveling our navels so that we may ingest the sun. We are not afraid of the darkness. We trust that the moon shall guide us. We are determining the future at this very moment. We now know that the heart is the philosopher's stone. Our music is our alchemy. We stand as the manifested equivalent of three buckets of water and a handful of minerals, thus realizing that those very buckets turned upside down supply the percussion factor of forever. If you must count to keep the beat, then count. Find your mantra and awake your subconscious. Curve your circles counterclockwise. Use your ciphers to decipher coded language, man-made laws. Climb waterfalls and trees. Commune with nature, snakes and bees. Let your children name themselves and claim themselves as the new day for today. We are determined to be the channelers of these changing frequencies into songs, paintings, writing, dance, drama, photography, carpentry, crafts, love and love. We enlist every instrument, acoustic, electronic, every so-called race, gender, and sexual preference, every person as being of sound to acknowledge their responsibility to uplift the consciousness of their entire effing world. Any utterance will be unaimed. Will be disclaimed. Two rappers slain. Any utterance will be unaimed. Will be disclaimed. Two rappers slain.
It's like prophecy by poetic sledgehammer. It's just amazing stuff. And that's what
Just to break it down, so people understand what they heard. he's coming from a hip-hop culture point of view. And basically what I think he was trying to, or what he was saying to the people, is when you put on a record, the piece is called Coded Language. These are the thoughts that come into your subconscious. The history of music, the history of thereafter, of everything in your presence, connecting it all. And if you notice, you can tell what time period is, because at the end he says, any utterance will be unaimed, will be disclaimed, two rappers slain. Which is who he's talking about is Tupac Shakur and Biggie.
Oh, right.
So he brings it back to that. So he brings it back to that moment. So it's kind of like that's the epitaph. It's an end of an era, but at the same time, he's saying we can move on forever. And that's the kind of guy Saul is.
I'd love to see the live show, because from what I understand, you know, it's like costume changes, full on, you know, production show value thing. I'm really curious, because he really supposedly takes this character on, and you know, it's a full interactive performance piece.
Well, you know, the thing that makes it hard for people to connect with Saul is, for years and years, just like with books and movies, people have been considerably dumbed down on purpose on the radio. There was this renaissance in the early 90s of what was called the native tongues, and that was Tribe Called Quest, De La Soul, and the Jungle Brothers. Now, they brought in this kind of a consciousness and type of Afrocentricity to their lyrics, and then also inspired by the beatniks of the past eras. But what happened was, there wasn't anything you could really sell off it. I mean, you could sell a little bit of it. So rap had to move in, or whatever you want to call it, hip hop. I call rap the state we're in now because of the commercial aspect. That's all it is. Hip hop.
Right.
What they say, rap is something you do, hip hop is something you live. Right. And in case people don't know, there's the four elements of hip hop. There's graffiti, there's turntables, there's rhyming, and then there's breakdancing. So it's a culture. It's a complete culture.
Yeah.
I mean, people don't understand that hip hop started with live. We talked about it before. They started with live instruments, and because of the cutting of music programs, they were moved to the Y, MCA, and that's why they exactly went to turntables, and they turned them into drums. It was out of necessity, not out of, like, we don't like instruments or anything. That's what they had to do.
Yeah. They could create the noise they wanted to create, so they made it, and it made a new noise.
And then also, it was also the feeling of, another thing that people don't realize is that cultures were getting shut out, and the cultures get shut out really, really fast when you're in an urban environment because of fear of. So they had to create their own scene. They had to actually party out on the streets, or they had to take over those YMCAs and show people that we're not going to let this die.
Right.
And then, you know, breakdancing comes from, for those who really want to know where breakdancing comes from, you can look at the South American art of capoeira, where they do where they do the kicks and the flips and the backflips, and you can look at that and you can
it's a fighting dance, you know,
right.
when you get right down to it. Yeah, you see heaps of it here, actually. It's really kind of a popular, you know, you get touring shows of, you know, various entertainments from, you know, around the world or this part of the world, and you have plenty of that stuff that comes through.
If Stephen Hawking could dance, I always said that he would break dance.
He probably would.
He's got the robotic analog voice. I mean, I'm just saying. So he's already one step ahead. Yeah, but where that connects to Saul is, Saul grew up in this environment. Saul grew up and he saw New York change before his eyes. He went through the native tongues phase just like I did. I wasn't living inside New York, so I can't claim to know what it was like in New York at those times. But if you were in the 90s and the late 80s at that time, you had lyricist after lyricist, and it was really important. And people looked down on you if you couldn't rhyme. Now, if you look at, I'm not saying something, but if you look at some of the lyrics that they have now on the radio and what's accepted in the clubs and everything, they're not songs. They're tracks with words on them to just fill up the space of the track.
Yeah,
and
it's filler crap.
And here's the other thing that people don't realize. They say, well, the people who try to tell me who rap is crap all the time, well, a lot of the producers that were coming along at the time, they really cared about their craft and they cared about arrangement, and some were even came out of the musicianship world, and they came out from the session, being session musicians like the Shock G with Digital Underground. He changed the whole game with the Sex Packets album. But what people don't realize is that all of that was continually, I guess you could say, crumbling little by little with every month. They knew that the window was closing for the creative art. So they had to make, you know what it's like, John? It's like they had to create audio hieroglyphics. So the future
people
in the future, for the hip-hop culture, like Saul Williams and all that, they could study that when it came time for them to do what they did. And Saul picked up on, like, all the groups that I'm talking about, and then all of the movements, KRS-One, Boogie Down Productions, those were the big movements of poetry and lyrics. And basically what he did was he was coming from a poetry aspect, and he decided to go in a real avant-garde direction,
right,
and then decided to branch out into expanded ensembles and not just the sampling and a drum machine, because he saw what was happening to that area and that template and how it was being pretty much pimped out. So he wanted to expand his horizons that way. And then he hooked up with, you know, like people, like after two albums or two books, and then of course he did the movie Slam, where he got a big feature in, which
I still need to see that.
Slam poetry. So, you know, Saul did what, Saul has had this arc, and then the fact that the album beforehand he did with Rick Rubin, and that's another, you know, if people don't know who Rick Rubin is, he's the cornerstone of hip hop and 90s rock and metal and production.
Yeah.
And then also,
oh, he's like Mr. Polish.
Oh yeah.
Great
and then,
stuff.
And then but also here's the thing that makes Rick Rubin stand out. He's also Mr. Polish, but he's also Mr. Raw because of the stuff that he did with Johnny Cash.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
He knew how to.
Which is incredible.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
You know, just to summarize it all up and wrap it all up, because I know you probably have a story to go to. Saul Williams is an amazing lyricist, well read, very impressive with his timing, and very well aware of a lot of different musicians and their power and their ability. And he knows how to combine them and make something that's different and makes someone just tilt their ear and go, "What was that?" And very
yeah, it does have that effect for sure. You know, I've done that test and you go, "Huh?"
Right. Very few poets can do that, and that's not a diss. It's a one-dimensional aspect, and it's the problem with a lot of poetry, because you know you say the poem and they say, "Oh, that's nice." So there needs to be some kind of like nitroglycerin mixed in with today's times that we live in, and Saul has that. So, yeah, I thank you for playing that, and hopefully somebody got something out of that, and they're listening to the podcast, and they're like, Saul Williams. And
yeah, then go and find niggitardust.com, and then you're hooked up, and the question's answered.
Find it, or they. I've been meaning to check out his books. I mean, he has a few books out. Like I said, he's an author, and he has a lot of collected. What's that?
Oh, just, you know, I mean, he's one of these, you know, jack-of-all-trades kind of guys.
Yeah. He's for furthering the culture when it comes to music and art in different directions and keeping it abstract, but at the same time maintained in the concrete of reality so people can connect to it and understand.
Yeah.
And understand that this is kind of like, you want to know what it's like? He's like giving us a spoken word report on the world of the world news. That's what he's doing.
Yeah. That's about right. So I just think that it's one of the best albums, you know, as a piece of work that's come down. And a little birdie's mentioned to me that you're going to have a listen to that new Truckers. And it is rock and roll poetry. Especially there's two guys that write the lyrics, as far as I understand. And I know that all the ones written by the one guy, you're going to go, wow. It's just like it's some of the best organic American rock music I've heard in a long time.
Yeah, I've
and
heard
it
some,
is so.
I've
you know,
heard
it's
some
so.
Of it.
It's just so. You know, it sounds like a drum kit in a room. You know, it sounds like a band recorded.
Yeah.
You know, actually playing, and you know, it just lives and it breathes, and it hasn't been run through the production grinder to the point where it's lost all character, you know?
Yeah, I think that's what's needed in a lot of and you just gave a good segue for me. A good plug. A good plug. I mean, that's the same thing with the Al Green album. Lay It Down, available on Blue Note. I think you can even get it for $13.98, a deep discount.
Killing
no
Bob.
Shame in my whoring.
That's fantastic. All right, mate. You have a good night. It's good to talk to you.
All right. You too, John. Later.
All right, man. David from Maine. Him and his thing with that Al Green album. I'm going to get there. I promise. All right, I got one more track. I just felt like winging it, and there you go. You play a track, and you summon David. And so I think that this is the track that I had forgotten to have at the studio when Travis Meeks was here. And I've played it before, and it's just a groovy track. And it's just totally self-indulgent for no other reason. We're doing a music send-off for the weekend because I just, you know, still letting it sink in that, yeah, $8 a gallon gasoline by the end of the year. Okay, that's just remember that. When you look at everything else that's going on, when you're looking at the money being thrown down the money pit shithole that is the Iraq war, and... You know, remember that it's only going to get worse, and start planning now, because these are the same folks who got it right the last time when they said 100 by this year, and they were laughed out of the room by the media. And the guys who had the opposing view of $20 a barrel by the same time were taken seriously. I'd go on the safe side and bet on the fact that it's going to be $8 a gallon, easy, by the end of the year. $200 a barrel. And with all this futures trading nonsense, and we've been finding out that like the futures have been messing with the food shortages and you know, these rice and oil markets and wheat markets have been falsely further escalating the price rises. You think the oil companies won't try and do that with this? Oh, you are so kidding yourself. The tax on the gasoline will be the least of your worries. It's going to hurt. And, you know, we're just starting to see the beginning of that whole peak oil thing. I really think that this is a sign of the beginning of it. Finally coming to the religion of the marketplace. We're finally there. The religion of the marketplace is gone. Look. We're running short. It's getting harder to pull out of the ground. Reality has struck the market. All who bow to the market. So, you know, that's really pretty much, aside from that Hillary, it seems like Mrs. Clinton is effectively out of it. How graciously she gets out is up to her. Sooner the better. I think it'll be better for her career. I really do. And she could end up being ending her career as a real powerhouse. But I really got worries about her if she splits the party. But see, I don't think the party will split when it comes to the ballot box, but they could split concerning her. Oh, it's all just too much to digest sometimes. So sometimes you just got to play music. So I do believe that this is the track that I forgot to have, embarrassingly, when Travis was on. So we'll play it here because this is just the coolest song. Off of Days of the New, The Red One, also known as 3, Die Born. Roll it, Bob.
Oh,
days of the new, and, you know, I, sorry, I didn't quite mean to be the anchor on your evening there, but, you know, the some interesting kind of comment there about the idea of $8 a gallon gasoline, and Bob says to me, that would mean it would cost him about $300 to fill up his truck. Holy shit, Sherlock. And that would get you how far? I mean, it's a truck. Holy crap. And, you know, that is, you know, eek, you know, you put it in those kind of terms and you look at it and you're right, Bob, that's the kind of thing that can, like, completely kill an economy. That's just insane. And I just... Wah! An economy that bases itself on such a thing will not be able to function the way that it has. I mean, that's just madness. And so what's it going to be? What's it going to be out, you know, when it gets sold back to the United States military in Iraq after the surcharges? A V8. Oh, man. I just... Whew. And if you're vehicle-dependent, that'll be crippling. What if, you know, what about some poor sod who has, you know, like, guy who might actually have construction work? You know? Holy crap. And so when the builders unions and the construction unions, it's just me, you know, say their members need a raise because of increased fuel costs to get them, you know, to and from their jobs. Will the penny pinchers cry foul and then blame any possible inflation on the wage increase rather than the fuel cost? Ouch. Big ouch. I'm just trying to fathom that, you know. Because I know when I just, yeah, that's just wow. That really is a bummer when you start thinking about it. But that's where we're headed. I don't see how it's not. I saw these supply and drilling, rah-rah-rah, over demand, rah-rah-rah, over time, geological study thingies. Study, you know, some really great image work. And showing the availability over dollar value of oil over what's expected over the next decade and a half, two decades. You know how on a roller coaster it's that first dip that's the biggest? That's kind of what it looks like. So the first time that it falls, it's going to be woo-hoo-hoo! And it's going to hurt. Sorry, Bob. but yeah, that's maybe then will we seriously look into alternatives? Making viable alternatives that already exist, start making them reality and getting away from this. It can only be better. It can only be better. It can't get any worse. The money that's wasted, the money, and you know, as the new government here, who was all about climate change, is, you know, getting settled in. Word on the streets here is that Canberra is just swimming with oil and coal company lobbyists. Like, it's just a feeding frenzy down there.